This is CliffCentral.com.
Good afternoon to you at home, on the in the offices, in your car, on your phone, on your headphones, wherever you are. It is Smokuzi. It's the Unplugged and In Charge radio show. It's another edition on a Thursday afternoon. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Smokuzi. And it's another show that's going to be jam-packed up with something that's very interesting for you. We always try to bring in quite a variety of things onto the show and to make sure that you kept entertained, you kept informed with all the people that are doing many, many different brilliant things out there. Today I've got a chef and I've got someone that is multi-talented. Actually, the chef is someone that we've been friends for quite a while, and it's quite interesting that I've managed to be able to invite her through into the show this time around, which is quite an achievement. And I've actually done it with a couple of people that I've worked with before in other platforms and other things. Therefore, I'm going to be looking forward to hear exactly what she's all about, and it's going to be quite interesting. And also something that is quite highlight, actually. Speaking a bit of English, English is not my mother tongue, so sometimes I bite my tongue as I speak along. But I'm going to be playing something that's quite interesting on the background, which is something that is an achievement from one of my boys, DJ Venom. One of his single, Caught Fede. I've got an instrumental which is quite interesting, and it's there just to keep our minds running throughout the show. Thank you very much, my boy, for giving me your instrumental track, and shout out to you for your brilliant work. But yeah, man, I've had a very brilliant week. I'm looking forward to this show. Look, man, have you ever been told the truth? And I'm talking about the truth that you don't want to hear. And most of the time, we people, we don't want to hear the truth, you know. And it depends, you know, when someone tells you the truth, it actually tests your character, what type of a person that you are. Because some people don't like being told the truth. Instead, when they're being told the truth, they either become angry, or they become defensive, or they make you feel as if you're talking rubbish, because they don't like being told the truth. But you know what? At the end of the day, the truth is important for us to hear. And most of the time, when we are being told the truth, we're being told the truth from people that actually care a lot about us. And we forget that. And we think that when people tell us the truth, they are attacking us, or they're putting us down, or in some way or another. But the reason why I'm mentioning this is because I just thought I should share that today. I just had a session with one of my boys this morning after a meeting that we had. We were going somewhere and we were just having a chat as we walked into the car. And he was just telling me certain things about myself. You know, people actually are aware about you more than you actually think. And he was just going on telling me one thing after the other, one thing after the other. And I'm saying to myself, but this guy is telling the truth. And at some moment I stopped and I'm like, yo, mate, are you on my case this morning? But hey, you know, what I appreciate is that people that care about you will tell you the truth constructively. They won't tell you the truth to put you down or to make you feel less of yourself or to make you feel really useless. And I was really thankful to him. He just told me that, yo, man, you're doing some great stuff, but you need to pick up yourself on 1, 2, 3 things. And I said, you know what? I really, really appreciate it. And again, it's on the tip that I've been sharing with you guys, that it's always important to have good people around you. People that are genuine. Because we were talking about the fact that we were crying when we were chilling as gents. We were just having a chat. We were saying that one of my guys was sharing a story, saying to us that he was going out the other evening. It was supposed to be a business social outing. You know, taking out some guys that are potential business people that they would like to do business with. And you know, sometimes these things do work when you go out and you just have fun, you know, with people that you're potentially looking to have business with. So yeah, they were out having a good time, and the bottles kept on flying. They were sitting in the VIP. Balls kept on flying, you know. It's all about enjoyment, it's all about entertaining, it's all about trying to, you know, to have that rapport amongst each other. And then when the night came, when everybody had to go home, one of my friends, when he looked around, he saw that everybody was gone. And he was saying to himself, but what? How can these people do this? And what's even worse, it's people that are more, I can say they're more senior than him when it comes to business. So it was all about trying to, you know, when you have to soften the heart of a person in order for you to get that thing what you want, you need to go that extra mile. And that was the whole point and intention for my friend to do such a thing. So what happened is that they left him with the bill, and he says to me, boy, when I looked at the slip, there's two different bills. One would you know, the lighter stuff with the ciders, you know, the sodas, the tonics and whatnot, and the other one with the bottles. And I think there was three or four bottles that were ordered, and the total, it amounted to something about 15 grand. And he said to me, you know, when they left, I was just left alone and I didn't know what to do. But hey, they didn't want to let me go at the club, so I had to pay up, you know. And but the whole reason why he shared this story was to say that, you know, people are not genuine out there. There's always people that are chances. There's always people that are looking out to rip off of other people. And I think it's important as entrepreneurs, and this show is all about entrepreneurship, to always make sure that you are aware of the people that you associate yourself around, and always be aware of those people that want to take advantage of you. And that is not a good thing. But yeah, man, I'm going to be introducing my guests on the show. It's 5 minutes after 3 o'clock. It's a show that is between 3 and 4 o'clock. It is a privilege once again. It's a huge, huge blessing to be able to host the show with you today. And again, I'm looking forward to it. And shout out to everybody on Instagram that is tuned live. I see you. And shout out to everybody that is listening on their phones, who downloaded and took their time to go into the Cliff Central, or to their app store to download the Cliff Central app, to tune into the Unplugged and In Charge radio show. So if you want to interact with us, you can actually tag me at Sbokuzi on Twitter. I'm also at Sbokuzi on Instagram. You know, you can hashtag Unplugged radio show if you want to have some interaction with us throughout the show. And maybe there's something that you are hearing on the show and you want to ask any questions, because I can tell you there's some very, very interesting information that is coming your way that has got to do with relationships and the likes. You know, and I can tell you, it's something that you don't want to miss out on, because Mr. Begi Zungu, who's on the show with me, is going to unpack a couple of things, not only in relationship context, but also things that are good for our well-being as people in life in general. And we're also going to have some tips in terms of how to make some nice drinks if you have some guests over at your place. If you're on my Instagram live video, you're going to be checking out everything. I'm going to show you everything that has been prepared already. Likely they can maintain their taste. Emma, I think I'm correct in that regard. But yeah, the chef is going to unpack by herself on the show. But yeah, I'm going to start off by bringing in Leanne.
Hi, Spo. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. And you, Leanne?
I'm great. It's such a pleasure to be on your show today. I'm honored to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so thanks for having me. I must say that this is a great platform to talk about myself and to talk about my business, because I am a chef, I am an entrepreneur, and I do run a blog that is all about health and nutrition. On my blog, I give out awesome recipes on how you can make healthy nutritious meals at home without, you know, eating rabbit food, because that's easily associated with you eating clean or, you know, trying to live a healthy diet. Well, let me tell you guys, healthy food is tasty. I am the Fit Chef, whose blog you need to follow. And yeah, I hope that I can give your listeners an insight about, you know, how to live clean and how to book my services. It's going to be a good one.
All right, cool. Look, Leanne, we're interested on your story, hey? We know that you're a chef. I'm sure there's a couple of people that are listening to the show that actually are interested to find out, in terms of if they really want to go into this profession of being a chef, how do they go about? But we want to hear your story. So you can share with us and tell us, where does Leanne come from? Where were you born and bred?
Well, I was born in Rustenburg in Mkhwazi. And my parents are from Potchefstroom. So for a few years, we lived in Potchefstroom. My mom and my dad then got married and we moved to Pretoria. And I've been living in Pretoria since the age of 3. So I believe that ke motho wa tlhaga Pitori, and I'm in love with being from, you know, the Jacaranda city. How it all started in primary school. I went to primary school at West End. I was a part of the catering team. So it was just me and two of my best friends, actually, that were like a certain teacher's favorite. We always used to help out whenever there were like HOD meetings and events at school. So they said, these kids do so much, we should actually give them a title. And there was the catering team was born. I think my life started there. And when I think back on my childhood growing up, like being 5 or 6 at home in Orchards, me and my dad would on Saturday mornings, wake up, and he used to be a chef in Australia. Mm-hmm. And he showed me how to make omelets and so on. So I guess, you know, I was kind of nurtured into liking this. And as a teenager, I kind of got into the entertainment industry. I could say you and I worked together actually as bartenders. So right. Yes. I've always had a knack for wanting to entertain people, and what's a better way for people to get together than, you know, around a meal? I mean, I feel like I have one of the most important jobs in the world because people need to eat every day. You mm-hmm. can't go a day without having a meal. So I think I play a very important role mm-hmm. in everyday lives. And right now, I've had some crazy opportunities where I've had a chance to be on ETV several times, and it really wasn't planned. So ever since I've gotten the opportunity, you know, it's a great platform to bring the message of nutrition and nutritious food to the people. That's basically about it. I don't know what more to say about myself. I guess I opened a business. This is my passion, and I've always been, you know, selling something or trying to make cash on the side. That's how you and I started working together. So I think I've always just, you know, wanted to have an income, and doing this as a business has really empowered me.
That's quite an interesting story. I mean, when it comes to all nutrition and health, I mean, we are at a phase that actually, if you actually look at the general scope of how, I'm going to speak in terms of Africans.
Yes.
I mean, this thing of exercising, going to gym, is not something that was very prevalent amongst the black culture.
No.
You know what I mean?
No, it isn't.
I'm not saying that I'm putting them down or we didn't know anything, but,
definitely,
you know,
not.
Going to gym nowadays is something that is so popular. You know, if you don't go to gym, you know, it's kind of that thing that, you know, you're missing out, yo. You need to make a plan.
Yes.
But why I'm saying this is because food and exercise and keeping healthy, it's all part and parcel. And I think it's important to have people like you, you know, to share some health tips. You know, I know people do know some things that are healthy, but it's a different thing when you hear it from someone that has actually studied it and do it as a profession to make sure that they give you tips of what it is that is healthy that you can eat at home, you know, to make sure that you maintain a healthy lifestyle. So I'm going to introduce our second guest on the show. All right. He goes by the name of Beggy Zungu, and it's a man that has achieved quite a few things. Quite a lot. He's going to be sharing on the show exactly what it is that, you know, his journey into where he is right today. And welcome on the show, Mr. Beggy Zungu.
Thank you very much, Sbo. Thank you for having me here. You know, for a second, I thought these drinks were ours. And now I'm... I'd already picked which one I was going to drink, but now...
Sure. No, don't worry. We're going to have a taste of them later on.
Yeah. Okay, Beggy Zungu comes from Ulundi, a village called Mabedlana. That's where I was born and raised. Did my primary there, did my high school, and then went to University of Durban West Village, now called UKZN. Finishing my studies, I then trained as an accountant auditor. I did my training at Deloitte & Touche, which is a three-year training program. After that, I then went into internal auditing and risk management. I then occupied a number of positions in different companies. I'm basically what other people, what other people will call a job hopper. My friends actually, some of them at some stage called me a popcorn. You know, popcorn just
keeps on popping. Yeah,
keeps on popping. So. Sure. I was like that, but for me, it was part of the plan. It's not like I was just doing it for the sake of doing it. When I was at Varsity already, I knew I wanted to have my own consulting business. I knew I was going to do training in a chartered accountants firm, get some experience, and then start my own firm. So that was the plan. So going to these companies that some of them I will stay a year, others even less than a year, is because I will get in and see things that could be done differently. That's basically the kind of person I am. I will say, even though obviously accountants are seen as boring people, gray suits, I believe I was a different one in that my mind was actually racing. I actually like what Leanne says to say what she's doing now. It's something that started in primary.
Sure.
Now, the books that I'm going to talk to you about later, it's actually something that also for me started in primary.
Yeah.
As far as I can remember, I used to grab every, obviously at that stage, I come from a village, so English was a challenge.
Sure.
So every Zulu novel, short story that my brothers actually prescribed from my brothers at school,
yeah,
I used to take them, read them, and finish before they actually finish them as part of their curriculum. So I also knew that one day I want to write books.
That is so awesome.
Mm.
All right, cool. We're going to continue with your story just now. I'm going to just share something for the people and the listeners back home. Win an entrepreneurial package with 12 million rand with Alpha Code. Alpha Code is inviting applications for its prestigious Alpha Code Incubate program that seeks to identify and reward high potential innovative entrepreneurs to boost the development of fintech and financial services in South Africa. 16 businesses will be invited to pitch for 8 places on the Alpha Code Incubate program. The final 8 businesses will complete a customized 12-month program and will benefit from an entrepreneurial package worth 2 million rand each. The package consists of 1 million rand in grant funding, 1 million rand worth of support including mentorship, monthly expert-led sessions, exclusive office space in Sandton, marketing, legal and other business support services, as well as access to the RMI's networks. The first round of applications close this Friday, 7 September 2018. I will repeat, the first round of applications close this Friday, 7 September 2018. Terms and conditions apply. Find out more on the cliffcentral.com website. So that's something for the entrepreneurs out there. It's always good to make sure that you look out for opportunities. There's a whole lot of things that are going on out there. And I was saying just a few weeks ago that, you know, to be an entrepreneur, you always have to be proactive. And there is so much that companies, private companies are doing and government that is doing to make sure that, you know, the millennials of South Africa have access to things that can be able to empower them to make their businesses successful. I always see young people complaining about a whole lot of things. You know, but just because people are lazy and don't want to research and look out for opportunities, there's so many things. I mean, you have access to the internet these days. And when I think of some things, I mean, there are some countries that people just to register a company is such a huge hassle. And, you know, in South Africa, I mean, it's as simple as going to the into the internet and just punching in whatever that you need to punch in to make sure that your company is registered. So this is one of the opportunities. If you were listening to the show, you can make sure that you go to our website, www.cliffcentral.com, and have a look at some of the things that I've just read about Alpha Code that is offering an opportunity. It's an entrepreneurial package worth 2 million rand, and it can make a huge difference to you. But yeah, we can continue with the interview. Actually, I have something that is interesting that I want to play, and we're going to come back again to our two guests on studio.
Decisions are major decisions. And also there are a lot of small decisions that we don't make. That they tax our minds. They drain our energy. They create a lot of anxiety and nervousness and mental torment. Because we don't take care of it. We decide not to decide, which is a decision. Deciding to decide, to act, it's a major, major challenge for all of us at different points in different areas of our lives. And there are things that happen to us along the way, experiences that we have that prevent us from working through the mental block of acting, of doing those things that we know we ought to do. And so what I want you to think about is, what is there that you know you need to do, that you want to do this, but for some reason or another, you've been holding back. For some reason or another, you just have not been able to gather your nerves or be able to work through the procrastinating or putting it off or justifying or blaming. Some reason or another, you just haven't done it. And you know you ought to do this. You really want to do this, but you don't know why you haven't done it. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Raise your hand, please. Okay, then I've got company here this evening. I'm not talking to myself. Now, first of all, we know that this is not easy. Because in order to begin to reinvent your life, you've got to make a conscious, deliberate, determined effort. That you really got to put all of yourself into it. It's very challenging to act, to do those things. There are times when you're looking at it and you say, I know I need to do this, but I don't feel like it. I don't want to do it. I know I need to do it, yet leave me alone. No, I don't want to do it. So what do we do? What are those things that cause us to do like that? I think that among the things that prevent us from acting is the fear of failure. And if you've already failed, you don't want to fail again. The pain of that, the disappointment, the fear of loss is another thing. Because many times when we do those things that we know we need to do, we feel that we might lose somebody that we love very much and care about. We don't want to hurt anybody. Many of us don't act because we want other people's approval. We want everybody to like us and to accept us. And that's not possible. Many of us don't do the things that we want to do and don't act because of lack of self-confidence. We don't believe enough in ourselves. I have a friend who's been working on a job where she's miserable, talented, want to go to another place that she can do what she wants to do and make the kind of money that she would like to make and had some offers. But because of her fear and her lack of self-confidence of things might not work out, she won't take a chance on herself. So there she is spending 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and she's miserable. She hates to go to work. They're not paying her what she's worth. She knows it. But yet and still, she won't do that which she knows she must do, and it's wearing her out. There are a lot of people that their jobs are making them sick because they won't act. You check out the absenteeism and the people that are depressed. You see them coming to work angry. How are you doing? I don't know. Just leave me alone. It's not even 9 o'clock yet. You're talking about good morning.
This is CliffCentral.com.
All right. That was something interesting that I just wanted to share with you. Some wise words from Les Brown. I listen to Les Brown quite a lot, and he talks about a whole lot of things that are inspiring for the mind and that keep you thinking and keep you on your toes. So he was talking about, you know, making sure that you do that thing that you wanted to do. I've been in those situations a lot where you know that you got to do something, but you're so lazy, you're not going to do it. Even if you know that the deadline is tomorrow and you're going to wake up early in the hours and you're dragging yourself to do that particular thing that you know that it's going to be due within a few hours. And that's not always good. It's always good to be proactive and to stay motivated and to just do what you need to do all the time. So I'm going to continue our conversation on the show with the two lovely guests. I'm going to bring forward the lady who's making sure that she looks proper. Yeah, Leanne.
Yes.
All right, cool. Just unpack for us in terms of the whole world of being a chef. I mean, I do know the chef industry is something that, you know, is booming right now. There's a lot of young people that are interested in it. But what is it that people back home do not really know that, you know, you would like to share about the whole chef industry?
Well, what I'd like to tell other young people out there that are interested in going into the industry is that, one, you need to have a very strong character. Being in a place where you work with a group of people and you guys work like strenuous hours, which could be anything between like 11 to 16 hours, depending on the kind of establishment you work for. It's a very strenuous job. You need to have a strong character. You need to be hardworking and you need to really be passionate about it, because if that isn't the kind of person that you are, or this isn't something that you really love doing, you are gonna feel like the clip that we just listened to. Like it's 9 a.m. What's good about this morning, you know? So it's very important that you need to be passionate about what you do and you need to really have a knack for it. being in this industry, it's all about creativity, it's all about innovation, it's all about what it is new that you can bring to the table, and that's what's important. This is an industry that is very male dominated. So if you are a female, you know, you need to be ready to work into it, to walk and work into that kind of male environment, you know. According to me, you need to be someone that takes no shit in order to become a chef. And I think I'm that kind of person. And hence I was able to, you know, get myself this far in the industry, because in industry itself, like working in a hotel, working at a restaurant, it's something that is very difficult. I mean, I don't do it myself, so I really, it's hats off to people that work in properties and that wake up every day to go and do this, because it isn't an easy job.
All right.
It is definitely not.
So with yourself, what were some of your worst frustration moments that have got to do with a client, or, you know, a complaint about a dish maybe that you've made and someone was not happy? What were some of your worst moments? What were you cooking even at that time?
I'd say the worst moment I've had in the kitchen was actually when I was doing my internship. It hasn't been with any of my clients per se. Like, this is a very intense place and, you know, you the student, so everybody's looking at what you're doing and if you're doing it right. And I actually got into an argument with one of the sous chefs.
Sure.
And this is like your third in command person in this kitchen.
Yeah.
And what is frustrating and what got me so wound up about it is that I did do this specific task properly, just as I was asked to. But somebody else had taught me how to do it instead of the person that actually needed it, and they didn't approve of the way it was made. And you know, you can only take so much as a person. It's high pressure, it's a very crazy environment. You need to always be on your toes and think of a way of how to sort something out. Like, if that salmon is overcooked, or if that chicken is undercooked, like, a person will not enjoy it. A kitchen is an area where it's about lives. Someone could die if you cook something the wrong way, or if a germ, or if you do anything wrong. So, you know, it's high pressure, and I just got frustrated that I had done something the right way, according to me, obviously being a naive student. Mm-hmm. But it was wrong. And yeah, it was just a mess. That was the most frustrating day I have ever had in industry. Mm-hmm. I think part of the reasons why I decided to start my own business.
Sure.
Instead of working in that kind of environment.
All right. Tell me something. Because, I mean, I always see these things on TV. I've seen it a couple of times when I've gone to hotels as well, where you find that making one dish, it has to go through, I mean, either three or four of you, because you either, this one puts the meat and then it comes to this one puts the whatever that he puts on, it goes to this one, and then by the time that the dish goes through, it's gone through four or three different hands. Now, in the case where you're saying to me that there are times that you might just either, you have to be careful of germs, or, you know, either putting something that's not supposed to be put in, how do you keep track of which chef did something wrong if we were four that are involved, or if something goes wrong, are we all in trouble?
That is the thing about the kitchen. You need to be someone with a very high integrity that can, sure, actually step up and take responsibility and say, okay, I am the person that did this wrong, in order for the next person not to get into trouble because of you. So when there is a situation like that, you just pray that the team that you're working with are a team of honest people. And another way of figuring out who did what wrong is because there are different sections and different people are responsible, and the executive chefs or sous chefs delegate certain tasks to certain people.
Sure.
So that is definitely how they would know to catch you out, mm-hmm, if you do something wrong.
And it sounds like becoming a I have a friend that's actually a chef, and he worked in South Africa for quite some time, and he's moved back. He's from Lesotho.
Okay.
So he's working at a hotel in Lesotho. He spent many years in South Africa. But one thing that I do know, that I do recognize, that being going into the chef industry, you have to be someone that is on point. It's not something that you just... I'm sure you guys, I don't know in terms of if there's tests that you go through, obviously the practicalities of it, but I feel like it's something that you have to be on point and you have to be clean. Because most even guys that are in the chef industry, normally people think that it's only gays that, you know, look after themselves extra more as, you know, being males, you understand? But I've noticed that even the males within the chef industry, they are extra, extra clean. Is it something that one has to have within themselves and their character? Or what is it all about?
Well, I wouldn't say that it's something in character. I think hygiene is something that's important for everyone.
Sure.
And even as a student, you know, one of the modules that we go through is hygiene. And part of the module is personal hygiene. You need to be extremely clean. You cannot feed people dirt. First of all, you don't want to be... There are so many airborne diseases that people can contract. Food poisoning cases. And I mean, as a chef, you don't want to be responsible for somebody dying at your hands. So that's where the cleanliness and the hygiene part of things come in. And it's something that's very important. I wouldn't say it's part of your character. I think that it's very... that it's important for everyone, you know, to keep good hygiene. Especially if you're making food for people, you know. Nobody wants to put dirt in their mouths.
All right, cool. I just want to share something else again, once again. You know, it's for you at home as you're listening, whether you're on the phone, whether you're online, whatever platform that you are joining us in, you're welcome to the Unplugged and In Charge show. But yeah, what does it mean to be a man in today's world? There's a lot of confusion about this and a lot of anger directed at men. This is a conversation about masculinity everyone needs to hear. In this raw and authentic series of 6 podcasts, Craig Wilkinson and Khalid Osiris start from the premise that true masculinity is a great gift to the world. Equally relevant to men and women, it provides profound insights into why men behave the way they do. It unpacks the 3 core desires at the heart of every man, the question every boy needs answered on his journey to manhood. The 4 big lies about masculinity, what wounds the masculine heart, and the one thing every man wants from women more than sex. Man to Man Talks is brought to you by Carling Black Label. Drink responsibly. It is not sale to persons under the age of 18. It is also available now on the cliffcentral.com website. It's something for you to check out there. It's a man-to-man talk. They're talking about what does it mean to be a man in today's world, which is something that is very interesting because, I mean, we just came from Women's Month and there's been a lot in terms of women abuse and all different things that are related to a man towards women and all of that. And I think this is something that is quite contextual. And if you want to learn more, you can actually go and check it out on www.cliffcentral.com. Mr. Zungu.
Yes, sir.
Are you still with us?
I am definitely with you.
What do you think of some of the tips that the lady's sharing about in the kitchen? Are you a person that's active in the kitchen?
I used to be.
Sure.
I used to be. I'm the last born at home out of 4 brothers and a stepsister.
Sure.
So as you can imagine, being the last born, I was the one remaining behind when my brothers finished school and started working. So I basically had to do everything from fetching water, cleaning, cooking. In the midst of that, also go and sell fruits and vegetables. So I basically spent a lot of time in the kitchen. I think I did my fair share. And on top of that, I had to go and fetch water. Remember, in the village, now there are taps. Before that, actually had to walk 3-5 kilometers to fetch water. And at home, I had to be the one doing that.
Sure.
Now, in a way, it was a challenge as I grew older, because now you can't even approach girls. You're always with them fetching water. So it became a challenge.
Look at you being concerned about girls. Sure.
It became a challenge in that sense. Yeah.
I hear you. You know, there's something that I always enjoy when I speak to people like you, because... I don't know whether to say fortunately or unfortunately. It's something that is 50-50 in my mind. But I'm not a person that grew up in, like, deep in the rural areas.
Yeah.
And I feel that there's so many things that you enjoy, especially when you've grown up.
Yeah.
I mean, things like going to fetch water in the river, you know, herding the cattle.
Yeah.
You have to wake up early in the morning. There's a whole lot of stories that I hear. And for me, I mean, I do have a home back in you know, in the rural areas, yeah, but it's not somewhere that I visit all the time, and it's unfortunately I was never able to spend enough time, you know, to experience the actual lifestyle.
Yeah, you missed out.
You get what I'm saying?
I can tell you that. And okay, so because for me, for instance, yes, I went to the city for the first time,
sure,
when I was doing grade 11.
Mm-hmm.
And the city life is something I always read about in the books that I mentioned. So I had pictures in my mind of what city life was about. But sure, to actually go there for the first time, actually it was in and out just a day, grade 11. Then when I went to varsity, I then experienced the city life. So sure, a lot of things were quite obviously quite scary for me. I used to read about people being robbed because we didn't have that in the villages. So when you get there and you see someone being robbed right in front of you, you yeah, actually don't know how to react. But
sure,
yeah, it was just an experience. Mm-hmm. That's basically where I found myself. I would have loved to grow up. I would have loved to have grown up in the city, but I don't regret.
Sure.
Because there's a lot of things that I learned when I was there. Now, in terms of, like, I look at my 12-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She knows a lot of things that I actually started getting exposed to adversity only. She's
sure,
only 12. She knows so much, obviously. She goes to an English school. Mm-hmm. When she does homework, there's things that I must Google before I can answer.
Sure.
But it's just part of life.
And, you know, it's important that you say that there's lessons that you learned, because there's so many things that you pick up, especially practicality wise, when it comes to even being an entrepreneur. Because the inspiring thing about you that I'm actually finding out is the fact that you grew up just an ordinary boy in the rural areas that had big dreams.
Mm.
What did it take for you to have such a big dream and to get to a point of you getting out from the rural areas, you go to the city life to chase your dream? What is it that kept you going, and what were some of the things that were main principles to keep you disciplined and focused?
For me, I will say, to a large extent, faith. My father was a preacher, so faith is something that was instilled in me. So obviously you are told about the story of Moses, how he led the children of Israelites across the Red Sea. So and how David defeated Goliath, how Joseph went into prison for something he didn't do and emerged there a great leader. So for me, those are the stories that actually kept me going. Looking at my environment with limited resources, but this faith that I got from the Bible actually kept me going. And also, the fact that, I, as I said earlier, I believe I'm a very creative person. So I used to visualize things. Now, as I read about things in the books and listening to the radio, remember, we also didn't have TV. So
sure,
listening to the radio was a great part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for me, when I listen to the drama, the stories that we call them stories, mm-hmm, which is basically radio drama, those are the things that actually helped me to become imaginative and imagine these things and actually want to work towards them. For instance, when I was doing grade, I think 11, 12, one of the reverends, obviously they will come and have lunch at our house. He actually said to me, "Why don't you follow in your father's footsteps? You are the last born, your other brothers are gone. It doesn't look like they like this church thing. Now, when your old man dies, who's going to pick up the mantle?" And I told him, "I want to do a BCom, become an accountant. That's what is in me." And I actually never looked back.
Really?
So I think being able to imagine things helps you, because in the midst of your friends who are not as imaginative as you or creative as you, it then forces you to actually be alone, and when you imagine things, you begin to live in them. They actually grow in your mind. Also, that story I told earlier about having to fetch water, I was doing things that most of my friends were not doing, because they had girls at home. So I had to go fetch water, cook, clean, and do all those things. It then meant I don't have enough time to do every day to do what the other boys were doing. It's only when I got a gap there. But that helped me to then be alone, read about things, imagine them, and believe that they could actually happen.
Now, the interesting thing is that you brought with you two books entitled Don't Be Afraid to Fail and Why Are You Getting Married? All right. Are these your first two books that you wrote, or they are amongst some of the books that you've written?
They are amongst other books that I've written. Don't Be Afraid to Fail was the very first book that I wrote, and I published it in April 2010.
Sure.
It's got a story to it. But the books that I've written in total, it's six books. But if you add the translations to Zulu, it's then eight. Because Don't Be Afraid to Fail is also available in isiZulu.
Mm-hmm.
And then the recent one, which is titled From Small Beginnings to Big Brands.
Sure.
It's also in English as well as isiZulu. Now, the Don't Be Afraid to Fail, I actually like what the clip that you played earlier.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of truth in that. And some of these things is the emotions that I had to go through. I told you I was changing jobs because I wanted to get as much experience, but also because I used to get frustrated. She mentioned it earlier. You are in an environment where you believe this thing can be done differently, but you've got someone who tells you, no, you shall do it this way. Doesn't matter how much you scream and shout to say there is a better way, you have to, at the end of the day, comply. So that's the other challenge I used to face when I went to companies, which basically would lead to me wanting to leave. Then finally, when I was at MTN, I was a senior manager, risk management. I did not want to leave per se, but I felt it was the time now to actually start doing what I've always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So I went to my boss and said, you know, I love it here. I don't want to leave, but I've got this vision that I have. Apart from making money, I'm passionate about career guidance, empowering young people and small business owners. So I always had this thing that I want to have time to do this thing. So if I'm employed full time, it becomes difficult. You've got an 8-to-9 job. Some of these things, I want to do them in my village. So I thought if I have my own business, I'll have time to set aside and just go into the bundus there and help young people there.
Sure.
So I said to my employer, I want to change the nature of my contract. I want to still be here at MTN, but let's change the contract. Let me not be a full-time employee. I become a contractor. We agree on a rate per hour. So if I come for 2 hours, you'll pay me for 2 hours so that I can use the other hours to do what I want to do.
Very smart.
So she, actually, at that point, she did not say no. She just said, hey, that's a difficult thing you want to do. But anyway, put it down on paper. Let's talk. So I wrote it. Now, when she said that for me, it was like, this thing is going to work. So I wrote it. Now, when they got my proposal, they then said, for this thing to work, for us to even consider your proposal, you must resign. Completely leave the company. Then we'll consider. Now, that's a big risk. Because, and she's even saying, we might not consider you. But then for me, I think the time was right for me at that stage to say, this is just a test. Now I must go and do this thing. So wrote emails back forth until I said, now I'm taking the step. I'm resigning. I believe you guys are going to bring me back as an independent contractor. That's basically how I left.
Mm-hmm.
Big function, actually, for they gave me a contract for a month. And then another month, then I said, no, I'm leaving. Big function, farewell. Already I had prepared business cards and flyers about my company now. And the company, by the way, was named after my village. It still is. Mabedlana Group. Mabedlana
sure.
is the name of my village. So I leave. I set up an office at home. Now, imagine now you have to convince your wife, who has known you to be someone who's employed, always getting money, you get a bonus. Now you are saying you believe that God has given you this thing. You believe it's from God and it's going to work. So obviously had to just also step up in faith and believe that it's going to work.
Very true.
Now I set up an office. One of the rooms I convert into an office.
Mm.
Desks, laptop, everything is there. And what I used to do, when she prepared to go to work, yeah, I will also dress up. My office is right here, just downstairs. Have breakfast, dress up, get into that office, close the door, And then they will obviously bring me lunch and all that. Now I'm sitting there. MTN is not coming to the party. And it comes to a point where I see that it's not going to happen. I have to find clients now. And very fast, things just started spiraling out of control. Now it's not working because my major client was going to be MTN. And then I will build up on that. Now I'm sitting there in front of my laptop and I'm thinking, what if I died like this? Because remember, people don't understand what is in your mind. Even though you tell them, it's like it just gets in and it goes the other ear. So I felt I needed to write my story so that if I died at that stage, they will understand the reasoning behind. That's how don't be afraid to fail. Because even though I felt I was failing, but I still believe that I took the right decision. It was not working out, but deep down I knew I took the right decision. So I then thought, I'm writing a book for me and for others to say, don't be afraid to fail, exactly as what he's saying in the clip. If you believe there's something you're passionate about, it might fail, but it might not fail. If it fails, go back to the drawing board and strategize again. So that's basically how Don't Be Afraid to Fail was born. Now I started looking for publishers. People were just saying no, no, no. Then I thought, actually, why am I looking for the publisher? From now on, I'm the publisher. Now, Mabedlana Group moves from consulting to publishing. And I'm publishing my first book, which is this one. And I'm gonna distribute it because now I went to these stores that are known. I don't wanna mention them. I used to pester them to say, guys, right now, this book is published by me. Read it and tell me what you think. I don't want you to take it onto your ships. Read it. They just wouldn't accept it. I remember there's a time where I live in Little Falls, so there's a mall next to it, Clearwater Mall. There were 4 bookshops at that time. Mm-hmm. I went to each of them with a copy. The first one was selling mostly Christian books. There they refused to accept the book, literally. I'm saying, guys, it's a free copy. I don't want anything in return. I just want you to read and tell me. They said no. I took it and then I went to the second one. Second one, same story. They rejected the book. Not even to take it. They are not allowed. I think the second, the third and the fourth shop, when I went there, I just said, here's your book. Read it. If you like it, write back to me. And I left without giving them a chance to actually say, no, we're not allowed to take the book. So that's basically what I did. And that's what I've been doing now since 2010. To a point where last year, so it's a highlight now for my publishing, went back to the same big store that is well known, where I said, now I demand to meet the CEO to discuss my books, because I don't understand why you're rejecting something you've not read, you've not gone through and say it's bad quality. Finally, I got hold of the CEO and the CEO wrote me a nasty letter. It's nasty. Actually said,
sure,
just let's stop corresponding with me.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, let me print and frame it. I'm gonna keep it for the future, for the time when these books have actually started selling, because they're still gonna sell.
Sure.
So long story short, I've written a whole lot of books now. One of them is Why Are You Getting Married? Been married now for what, 15-16 years, but I've got friends almost similar age. Others are marrying for the second time, for the third time. Clearly, there's something wrong somewhere in this institution. There's something that has changed. So,
What makes you smile about what he's talking about?
I'm just laughing because I think it's true. In today's society, like, divorce is the new in thing.
Exactly.
You know, like, families don't stick together, and that is a very selfish thing to do from parents, and it affects children more than they may think. Mm-hmm. It's really something that needs to be worked on, and I think I'll give some older friends this book to read.
Yeah, so now because actually I'm just reminded, last week,
sure,
my daughter, I told you, she's 12.
Yeah.
So she's a star performer. She's always in the top 10 in her grade.
Great.
She's doing grade 6. So I always tell her, you are actually following in our footsteps. Your mother in primary was like that. I was like that. So keep it up.
Sure.
Actually, and then she says, really, Dad? Then I'm saying, I'll show you my certificates, because I've kept my certificates and the reports from primary. Actually, on the motivation part, Dad also used to motivate me, because in primary, I'm in position 3. I was always fighting for the top 5 position. Position 1 was difficult in primary. The girls were always, somehow, were always number 1, mostly. But when it went to secondary, they then dropped. Something used to happen. I don't know what. But in primary, they will be number 1. So I was like that. So we're sitting last week. I'm taking her through the certificates. She says, wow. Now I picked up a piece of paper that I wrote when I was at varsity. My goals. So because I picked it up when I was with her, so I said, let's go through my goals. Let's tell me how I've done. Now we are ticking. I said I wanted to become a marriage counselor and an author and a speaker. She said, tick that. I wanted to write books. Tick. I wanted to have a happy marriage. She says, tick. So now that thing of being a marriage counselor is something that I'm also passionate about. At varsity, when I used to tell people I will be a marriage counselor, they used to laugh at me because I didn't have a girlfriend. I never had a girlfriend. Now they're thinking, you're at varsity, you've never had a girlfriend, and how are you going to counsel people?
I'm saying,
that's what I will be doing. So, and I'm sitting, I'm thinking, something is wrong. We can't just be having so many divorces. But obviously, it's subjective, because in the past, people will stay in marriages even if there was no love, just for the sake of the children. Mm-hmm. Some people will actually do that. But the number of divorce cases has increased in the black community. Now, I'm saying in the book, people need to question themselves before they get into marriage. It's not a negative topic. Some people are thinking, hey, why are you so negative about marriage? I'm saying, hey, I'm married. I believe happily.
Yeah.
Now, why are other people breaking up? So the question that needs to be asked is, when you do say, I'm going ahead, why exactly? What's your motive? Because the motives, there's a problem with people's motives now.
Sure.
People marry for money, marry for all other things except love. So I'm saying, even if you've been living together for 5-10 years and you decide that now you want to formalize by signing, ask yourself, am I getting married for the right reason? So in the book, you'll find the chapter about what the singles said. I asked people who are single, do you want to get married? Why? And they gave me answers. They are in there. Those who were married, why did you want to get married in the first place? The answers are there. Those who were divorced, I said, why did you want to get married in the first place? And why do you think caused you to divorce? And people opened up. And then those answers, I actually realized there's something that needs to be addressed. Like you've just commented about my upbringing in the village. We lived differently. Now we are here. My neighbors, I don't even know their surnames. That's just the nature of the environment where we're living in. Now I'm going to meet someone who comes from Rustenburg, from wherever. And now we find ourselves here.
Sure.
We live different lives now, different from our parents. Mm. Now, if you meet a guy from a village like me, the village in me will not just go out. So there's certain things that I will be doing differently from someone who was born and raised in the township. Hence, before I get married, I need to check if we are aligned. There is a chapter there on checklist. I'm saying, do you have a checklist? Do you know what kind of a person you want to marry? I had a checklist way back. But guess what? When I found my very first girlfriend, I forgot. Not forgot. I think I was just caught up. Remember, I've been single all my life. Now I'm working.
Sure.
I've got a car. And then I feel something missing. Now, when that person came, it was like, boom. Forgot about the checklist. Proposed love to her. She agreed. Now, when the emotions had subsided, she was in, we were in Pretoria, by the way, that time. Mm-hmm. Emotions have subsided. Now I'm thinking, yeah, I had a checklist. Does this person actually meet all the... So now I take my checklist. Number one, how do I bring this up? How do I bring this to her now? It was a sensitive matter. Mm. You see, so very sensitive. Mm. And then it just exploded.
Sure.
So that's why I'm saying in the book, you need to have some kind of a guideline.
100%. And you're talking about a very sensitive topic. And I think when I just look at things in a much broader light, there's so many things that contribute to the way we see marriage, especially as young people in these days. I mean, this is my own opinion. Everybody has their own opinion and entitled to it. But I really feel that so much influences, especially when it comes to social media, yeah, when it comes to movies, it comes to soapies, it comes to a whole lot of things, series, whatever that we watch. It does contribute to how we see marriage and contribute to your own individual personal decision. Mm. And I mean it can be different from person to person in terms of how much it influences them. But I feel that the world that we live in, there's so much that it influences us, even our lifestyle.
Yeah.
Because I really believe the more things that you see, the more things that you consume into yourself is what's going to influence how you see the outcome of how you will become in the world.
Yeah.
But it's something that is very deep. It's another topic for another day. But yeah, thank you so much for sharing something that can actually spark a bit of thinking. I mean, I'm a young person. I'm a person that actually sees myself to get married one day. Okay. And I think I will probably need to read one of your books just to make sure that, you know, I pick up, because I'm a person that believes a lot in reading and making sure that you inform yourself and make informed decisions. And I think probably I will have one of your books and just to have a read, you know, because, you know, I'm growing up myself as something that one day I will consider.
That's your copy.
All right. Thank you so much. But yeah, we actually nearing towards the end of the show. I'm going to give you a chance, Leanne, just to quickly tell us about the two drinks that you made for us here in studio. So that people, maybe if there's some tips that they might want to pick up, they can actually pick up some tips and try it back home.
Oh, yes. So an awesome way to get the real recipe in case, you know, something misses your ear is to go onto my Instagram, cumin_by_chef_lee. Right in my bio is a link to my blog. You will find fantastic recipes there. Now, moving on to the drinks that we have here today. So I call these gin flower bomb cocktails. So over here we have lime, we have gin poured into an ice cube tray with edible flowers. So you just pop your gin into your ice tray, add in some edible flowers and freeze it. And then you chop up some lime, either slices or quarters, with lemongrass. Now, lemongrass isn't very popular, but this is like a great burst of flavor and freshness that goes in there. So one of them is pink and the other one is clear. With the pink one, it's just some food coloring added just to give it that cocktail look. You can add some cordial that'll give it that different color as well. So the limes that go in give it this fantastic flavor. And yeah, this is a quick and easy way to entertain your guests this spring. Please don't bore everyone that comes to your braai with your normal drinks. Make some effort, make them something nice, you know, be the great host. This is for people that are always having people over. It's a great cocktail idea. You can enjoy it after work on a Friday when you have some time. You know, it's just something awesome and quick to make, because we made the cocktails in under 5 minutes. You just need to pre-ice your cubes. Yeah, that's about it.
All right, cool. Any last words from you, Peggy?
No, lastly, I think it's just to introduce my latest book titled From Small Beginnings to Big Brands. Free ebooks as well, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Thank you so much, guys, for joining me on the show. I've had a great time to hear from you guys, personally, your personal stories. And we are going to keep in touch. And I'm looking forward to reading your book, Peggy. Thank you so much for bringing it through. Thank you so much, Leanne, for making your time, for giving us, for coming through onto the Unplugged and In Charge show. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you
this much. Is your boy, Smokuzi. Thank you so much to everyone that tuned in. I really, really appreciate it. Shout out to everybody on my Instagram live. You can catch the podcast on www.cliffcentral.com. Just in case that you missed the show, you can catch it there. You can also follow me at Smokuzi on Twitter, at Smokuzi on Instagram, and you can hashtag Unplugged Radio Show. Thank you so much. And yeah, we will catch you again next week.
This is CliffCentral.com.